Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Merkel Media.
Flashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to July 2022, episode 250, Kissinger Report. Hey, if you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible gold and silver, talk to our sponsor, Wise Wolf. Get in the Wolfpack Auto Buy Program at www.macroaggressions.gold. Now enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. And I'll tell you, we couldn't do it without the support of our sponsors. Thanks so much to the folks over at C60 Purple Power. They have been part of this show for about 2 years now. I'm grateful for their support. They're making the best C60 product out there. It is a naturally occurring carbon molecule comprised of 60 carbon atoms. It is the most powerful antioxidant known to man. The guys that discovered it won the Nobel Prize for it. It's kind of a big deal. Nobody knows about it, though. That's the thing. I mean, you're not going to hear about this on your nightly news. So I'll tell you what, this is what you should probably do. There's a link in the description in the show notes that'll take you there, or you can go to shopc60.com and just read about it. See what you think. It's a free radical sponge. It looks something like a hollow soccer ball. We'll see it. If you go to the website, you'll see it. And if you do, use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself a little bit of money. Look, you're going to need as much protection as you can get from the environment. God knows they're cooking up different ways to kill us every day, it seems like. So protect yourself in every way that you can. This helps to lift the oxidation burden on your cells. It helps your cells take out the trash easier. So by doing that, it frees them up to create more energy for you. But what do I know? I'm not a scientist. Ken the scientist is, though. And he is, he's a nuclear physicist working with this material and discovered that the best protection for him working in that industry was this substance called C60. So he started to make, he built a company. So if you are so inclined and interested and curious to know what the hell is going on over there, go to shopc60.com. Use the promo code MACRO to save yourself a little bit of money. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. And also thanks to our friends over at My Patriot Supply. They built a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can go there and get yourself a 4-week supply of food. You can get yourself a 3-month supply of food. If you get a 3-month supply of food, just be warned, they're going to send you 6 buckets with 120 pounds of food. Okay. You're going to be set up for a long, long time. If you are already taken care of, and hopefully you are, God knows I've been ranting and raving about this like a maniac, but if you are already taken care of, good for you. You're paying attention. You're going to be doing a lot better than most people. Have you considered maybe picking up a little bit of extra food for your family members, ones that maybe live out of state or don't see things the way that you see them? Make you a super nice person if you were doing that. So I'll tell you what, go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, take a look for yourself and see if you think that you're in the market for some food. It's not just food though, survival gear. They have water filtration, air purification. They've got quite a bit. Camping gear. Hopefully you don't need any of this. Solar, little portable solar panels and energy generation devices. So yeah, look, I wish we didn't have to think about this. I wish all this stuff was like theoretical and like, oh, well, maybe one day, or, oh, those preppers, you know, those crazy preppers out there. That's not the case. Unfortunately, we see what's happening. We have the benefit of a supply chain delay, right? That we can see the lag coming, but it's coming. We can deny it. We can deny reality if we want, but you cannot deny the effects of denying reality, as they say. So look, I don't care if you use my sponsor or you get food, extra food every time you go to the grocery store. Not my decision. I'm just going to present you with an option for it and see if you are so inclined. If you want to take a look, they're doing great things over there. Prepare with macroaggressions.com. The link's going to be in the description if you're interested. Also, I forgot to tell you, we've got this great merchandise shop too. It doesn't just sell macro aggressions merchandise. It's got all kinds of funky things. You can get cool shirts like this that say Macro Plus with the CNN logo. Wink. That's called foreshadowing. I'll leave it there. The link is in the description for that. Hey, look, we're going to talk about a very I guess it's a dangerous subject. It's an important one. It's a depressing one, to be honest with you. And I'm not trying to scare people. It doesn't do us any good to be scared. I do want to educate the best I can. Educate myself first, obviously, and then kind of spread the word and say, hey, look, this is what I've found. I've found some things out here. Maybe you're interested in this. And lately we've been on the topic because of some, because of the Roe versus Wade situation. It's been worth bringing the abortion topic back to the forefront, right? Women's reproductive rights and all the, everything that goes along with that. This is not, by the way, this is not going to be an episode on abortion. I'm not going to get into that. But it is going to be an episode talking about depopulation. And of course, that plays in to the abortion topic as well, because you can't have one without the other. So it got me, the Roe versus Wade overturning, which didn't ban it. I mean, unless you watch CNN or MSNBC, they banned it. They didn't ban it. They just made it a states' right issue, which is where it should be anyway, all this stuff. But it started the conversation about women's reproductive rights again. It started the conversation about population control. Are we overextended for this beautiful planet that we're on? I don't know, but I'll tell you who thinks we are overpopulated. All of the worst people in the world. Okay. All of the globalist maniacs like Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller and the Rothschilds and Klaus Schwab and all of these people say we're overpopulated, which right there, you know, whatever, if they propose anything, I'd be on the opposite end of it. So if they say we're overpopulated, then I say we're probably underpopulated. I don't really mean that, but I just, whatever they want, I want the opposite of. And it caused me to get into a document of Henry Kissinger's. I'd mentioned this before, but I'd never read the full thing. I'd read parts of it, but I'd never read the full National Security Study Memorandum 200. This was released in December 10th of 1974. This is unofficially called the Kissinger Report. Now, you have to understand who Henry Kissinger is, I think. And I haven't done a full episode on that disgusting monster, but I will. It's on my list of things to do. He's a very important person. He's not a good person at all, but he's an important person. And, you know, he was brought in by the Rothschild or the Rockefellers. David Rockefeller mentored Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger mentored Klaus Schwab. Just so we're clear on the chain of custody here in this, you have to, I mean, you could be a certified grade A sociopath like Henry Kissinger is, but you need the Rockefeller molding to really understand how far you can take things using government, media, policy, you know, all the things that the state is involved in. So what Kissinger did was he became, you know, he's the Secretary of State and deeply involved in the creation of these people, you know, his role. So what I want to do is this. It's a 123-page document. The link to it is in the description. If you're having trouble falling asleep at night, you don't need medicines. Just read this document. It'll put you to sleep. Might give you nightmares, but it'll put you to sleep. It's very dense. I read the whole thing. It took 2 days. It's not an easy read, but I had to do it. I had to read every word of it. And the reason is I didn't want to have, you know, to miss the paragraph where, you know, it undoes everything that they said. That never happened. It was consistently psychotic through the whole, from the start to finish. You won't be disappointed. It's every bit as awful as you would suspect it would be. And it is. So what I want to do is this. I'm going to, and I've got more notes for this episode than I've ever had for anything else before. Folks in the control room, fire up the document cam on this one. Fuck, holy shit, I got everything for it. So look, we're going to start at the top. I'm going to read the first four sections of the executive summary of the beginning of this document. So this is going to be me reading. Bear with me. I have allergies. I'm dealing with it. I've got a mute button here if I start coughing. So we're gonna get through it. I mean, listen, living in Colorado, man, my body is still not used to it. I'm allergic every time I go outside. But we're going to get through it, because if we don't, then you won't understand how bad of a person Henry Kissinger is. And this is really kind of essential. So we're going to start with this. This is how it begins. World demographic trends. So this is kind of setting the stage for what they're seeing out there. Now, I want you to understand something. This document was written in, it was put forth on December 10th, 1974. So we're going to round up and just say this was 50 years ago. Wasn't quite 50 years ago, but close enough. And I say that because it's important to understand when they're talking about numbers and when they're talking about dollars, these are all 1974 numbers and 1974 dollars. So keep that in mind. Starting with number one, world demographic trends. Number one, world population growth since World War II is quantitatively and qualitatively different from any previous epoch in human history. The rapid reduction in death rates, unmatched by corresponding birth rate reductions, has brought total growth rates close to 2% a year, compared with about 1% before World War II, under 0.5% in 1970, or in 1750 to 1900, and far lower rates before 1750. The effect is to double the world's population in 35 years instead of 100 years. Almost 80 million are now being added each year, compared with 10 million in 1900. The second new feature of population trends is the sharp differentiation between rich and poor countries. Since 1950, population in the former group has been growing at 0 to 1.5% per year, and in the latter, 2% to 3.5%. Some of the highest rates of increase are in areas already densely populated and with a weak resource base. Because of the momentum of population dynamics, reduction in birth rates affect total numbers only slowly. High birth rates in the recent past have resulted in a high proportion of young age groups, and so that there will continue to be substantial population increases over many years, even if a two-child family should become the norm in the future. Policies to reduce fertility will have their main effects on total numbers only after several decades. However, if future numbers are to be kept within reasonable bounds, it is urgent that measures to reduce fertility be started and made effective in the 1970s and 1980s. Moreover, programs started now to reduce birth rates will have short-run advantages for developing countries in lowered demands on food, health, and education and other services, and in enlarged capacity to contribute to productive investments, thus accelerating development. Number four, this is the last point. United Nations estimates use that, UN estimates use the 3.6 billion population of 1970 as a base. There are nearly 4 billion now, meaning 1974. And project from about 6 billion to 8 billion people for the year 2000, with the U.S. median estimate at 6.4 billion. The U.S. median projections show a world population of 12 billion people by 2075, which implies a five-fold increase in South and Southeast Asia and Latin America, and a seven-fold increase in Africa, compared with a doubling in East Asia and a 40% increase in the presently developed countries. Most demographers, including the UN and US Population Council, regard the range of 10 to 13 billion as the most likely level for world population stability, even with intense efforts at fertility control. Okay, so that was just reading straight from their playbook. Here's some stats. They're talking about the adequacy of world food supplies, and they're saying that between 10 and 20 million people were dying from starvation every year in the 70s. Okay. Mineral and fuel resources in LDCs. This is a term they use a lot. LDCs. It stands for lesser developed countries. You know, brown people countries. And this document is so fucking colonial. It is like, you know how like all the leftists are like the white supremacy and they're doing things. This is the document they should read. They'd be like, oh yeah, it's all right here. It's full white supremacy in this document. This is, it's like, I mean, they don't really come right out and say it's brown people, but it's brown people they're looking for. And yellow people too. They don't like them much. Economic development and population growth. So they're saying too many people in the LDCs, lesser developed countries, means lower GDP growth rates because the money is being used on survival instead of investments. Okay. More from, I've written out, you know, quotes from this thing. Like I said, it's 123 pages. I would just pull chunks out and write it down because it seemed like first of all, I want to get the wording right, because if otherwise someone will say, oh, you just think that it means that Henry Kissinger and his crew are trying to depopulate the world. You're just assuming that, because I'm not making any assumptions here. Don't need to. They come right out and tell you exactly what their plan is. You just have to read the document. Now, I read it so that you don't have to, but the trade-off is you do have to listen to me read some quotes from it. So, you know, is that fair? I'll give you a couple paragraphs that I've written down as quotes, and then you don't have to read 123 of the most crazy, insane pages out there. But again, the link is in the description if you're interested in it. Okay, so here's a quote from there. The universal objective of increasing the world's standard of living dictates that economic growth outpace population growth. In many high population growth areas of the world, the largest proportion of GNP is consumed with only a small amount saved. Thus, a small proportion of GNP is available for investment, the engine of economic growth. We cannot wait for overall modernization and development to produce lower fertility rates naturally, since this would undoubtedly take decades in most developing countries, during which time rapid population growth would tend to slow development and widen even more the gap between rich and poor. Okay. This is about money. This is about managing resources, and it's about keeping the population of these countries smaller. All right, we're going to get into some of the details of how they plan to do that, why they feel it's urgent, and really, if you read between the lines, what this is all about. And it is colonialism. I mean, when you hear me reading the quotes, just in your mind, just use Kissinger's accent because it makes it sound even worse. Okay. Political effects of population factors. The political consequences of current population factors in the LDCs, rapid growth, internal migration, high percentages of young people, slow improvement in living standards, urban concentrations, and pressures for foreign migration are damaging to the internal stability and international relations of countries in whose advancement the U.S. is interested, thus creating political or even national security problems for the United States. In a broader sense, there is a major risk of severe damage to the world economic, political, and ecological systems, and as these systems begin to fail, to our humanitarian values. I'm assuming they said that with a straight face. I don't know. Henry Kissinger is worried about his humanitarian values. God. Policy recommendations. This is what they want to do. Okay. So there's too many people. And if there's too many people, then you run the risk of the country being like chaotic. And if it's too chaotic, then these globalist companies that these multinational companies can't do what they need to do in these countries if they're fighting all the time or if there's political unrest. So it's what Kissinger is really saying in the whole of this document is we need to lower population, not because we're some altruistic good guys over here. We need to lower it because if the populations get too big, then it creates problems in that country. And if there's problems in that country, then we have problems with our corporations working in those countries. Got it? So it's not about the people. They don't give a fuck about the people. It's that they're corporate. You know, we can't run the diamond mines if there's an uprising in South Africa. You get it? You know what I mean? So, okay. So here's the policy recommendations. They're not good. World policy and programs in the population field should incorporate two major objectives. Letter A, actions to accommodate continued population growth up to 6 billion by the mid 21st century. That's like mid 21st century would be the year 2050. Without massive starvation or total frustration of development hopes. And letter B, actions to keep the ultimate level as close as possible to 8 billion rather than permitting it to reach 10 billion, 13 billion or more. Just to put this in perspective, and they're looking at when they talk about long term, they're looking at the year 2070, which makes sense because they're in 1974 and they're operating from a base of 1970. They're saying these are the numbers we're going off of in 1970. And these are the numbers we'll hit in 2070, right? So it's 100 years. That's the reason why they chose those numbers. They make more sense for them. Just to put it in perspective, though, where we are currently right now in the year 2022 is we are at 7,961,000,000. So we are just a tiny bit under 8 billion. And if you'd like, so 7.961. Let's just round up and say 8 billion. So we're at 8 billion now. Okay. So I want to read this. Here comes another quote. There's going to be quite a few of these quotes, but as I read them, I'll give you the context as to why I picked these out. So while specific goals in the area are hard to state, our aim should be for the world to achieve a replacement level of fertility by about the year 2000. This will require the present 2% growth rate to decline to 1.7 within a decade, meaning like by 1985, okay, and to 1.1% by the year 2000. Compared with the UN medium projection, the UN set some projections like if you do nothing, it's going to be this bad. And so what they're saying is if they use this goal would result in 500 million fewer people in the year 2000 and about 3 billion fewer in the year 2050. So if they can reduce the population, or if they can put these birth control measures in place, they think that by the year 2000, which is 25 years for them, essentially. In 25 years, we think that our birth control programs will do such a good job that we will prevent 500 million people from even being born by the year 2000. And if we're able to prevent 500 million people by being born in the year 2000, that equals 3 billion people by 2050. Meaning, if we do nothing, there will be 500 million more people than we want, and they will multiply, and by the time it's 2050, that'll actually be like 3 billion people. So what they're saying is effort early on preventing fertilization in these LDCs, the sooner the better. Meaning the sooner we start to throw a monkey wrench in their reproductive systems, the better off we'll be, because it's not just about taking out a couple million people here or there. What you have to understand is that if you take out half a billion people, that actually equates to 3 billion people that you're taking out of if you extend this timeline long enough. And these people look at long timelines. So attainment of this goal will require greatly intensified population programs. A basis for developing national population growth control targets to achieve this world target is contained in the World Population Plan of Action. They had one of those. The United Nations ran it. It's all about getting rid of people. They hate people. They hate people. Now, we've talked about this quite a bit, and if you're going to have a one world government, you're going to need some people, but a lot of the quote, useless eaters, as Henry Kissinger called them, they just suck up resources. They never get educated. They don't contribute to the rural farmers or whatever. I mean, fuck, we need farmers. But the way these guys see it is these people are a drag on society. So we got to get rid of them. And to make this whole one world government thing work well. So, you know, when you're reading this, if you're somebody that doesn't know anything about their plans for a one world government, then you might read this document and say, oh, they're just trying to make sure that we prune the rose bushes. You know, we get rid of some of the leaves and the branches that we don't need as maintenance, to maintain the overall health of the rose bush. to put it in a non-human psychopathic sort of way. You know, this is the way they see these things. So if you're just reading this document, you may be lulled into some false sense that this is about helping these third world countries. Like, the American empire is going, well, we're America, and we've done a really good job of making this country what it is, and this is how we did it, and we're looking at you, Bangladesh, and you're doing it wrong. What you really need to do is you need to do this, this, and this. You need to get rid of this population. And so if you're a nice person and you read this document, you might think, oh, they're trying to help Bangladesh. They're not. They're trying to get rid of as many of those people as possible because they don't want them. It's harder to make the one world government fit when you've got too many people on the planet. And that had always been theoretical, I think, until recently. A lot of people are now very comfortable with understanding that that is the plan. They've watched this happen. They know that the medical industry is used as a tool to help make this work. And the medical industry, as I will show you in this, is very much involved, and very much the same groups that are pushing the vaccines today are the same groups that are in pushing the same policies in the LDCs, because it's all about depopulation. It's just coming to us now. Okay. The World Population Plan of Action is what they mentioned. So the World Population Plan of Action that these maniacs talked about earlier in the year in 1974 is not self-enforcing and will require vigorous efforts by interested countries, UN agencies, and other international bodies to make it effective. U.S. leadership is essential. The strategy must include the following elements and actions. And this is where they get very specific about who they are going after. Letter A, concentration on key countries. Assistance for population moderation. Population moderation. You know, they found the nicest ways to describe genocide, don't they? Should give primary emphasis to the largest and fastest growing developing countries where there is special U.S. political and strategic interest. It's not just fast developing countries. It's the ones that have interest to the America. So if you're a country that doesn't have any resources, then America doesn't give a fuck about you. So those countries are, okay, I'm going to read these countries out. But in advance, if you are listening to the show or watching the show and you live in any of these countries, and during the course of your lifetime, you have felt on occasion that maybe the United States is doing something nefarious inside your country with regard to the way it manages your population, and you would be correct in your assessment. They put this in a document and labeled the countries by name and said that this is where they're going. Those countries are India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Nigeria, Mexico, Indonesia, Brazil, Philippines, Thailand, Egypt, Turkey, Ethiopia, and Colombia. Letter B, integration of population factors and population programs into country development planning. Letter C, increase assistance for family planning services, information and technology. Letter D, creating conditions conducive to fertility decline, meaning providing minimal levels of education, especially for women. We're going to get into that towards the end of this. I'm going to explain what that means when they say providing minimal levels of education. Education of new generations on the desirability of smaller families, brainwashing them. Expanding wage employment, especially for women. Now, that might sound like a good thing, right? They say, well, we want to employ women. We want to make sure that women have the opportunity to earn money. Oh, is that because you like women and want them to be more equal? And it's like, no, The reason why they do that is that they basically want them working and out of the house to stop having kids. That's what they want. So, look, when Henry Kissinger is proposing something for you, it's not coming from a good place. So when he says, we want to expand wage employment, especially for women, it's like, that's not good. It's not a good thing. Not the way he wants to do it, at least. Okay. So this World Population Plan of Action was adopted by 137 different countries. And it happened in August of 1974 at the UN World Population Conference. I bet that was a hoot. So then this document that I'm going through came out 4 months later. So here's a quote. We must take care that our this is so crazy. They forget. This is a classified document that became declassified. So you have to understand that they don't expect people to be reading this. Okay. They expect the Kissinger groups, to be reading this, but they don't expect you and me to be reading this. This was not meant for us to ever find this. But here's one of the things it says. We must take care that our activities should not give the appearance to the LDCs of an industrialized country policy directed against the LDCs. Third world leaders should be in the forefront and obtain the credit for successful programs. So what it says is, look, it's going to look bad if we're the ones doing it. So what we need to do is we need to get the leaders of India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Mexico, all these, we need to get them to do it for us. And we'll let them take the credit for it because it kind of looks bad if we're doing it. We look like we're an empire if we're doing that, right? So it goes on. It goes on. There's a number 37 in this document. It says there is an alternative view which holds that a growing number of experts believe that the population situation is already more serious and less amenable to solutions through voluntary measures than is generally accepted. It holds that to prevent even more widespread food shortage and other demographic catastrophes that are generally anticipated, even stronger measures are required, and some fundamental, very difficult moral issues must be addressed. Like, you mean secretly doing it? You know, this population problem is so big, and we want these countries to voluntarily get on board with this, but they're not all going to want to do it. So we have to really consider stronger measures that are required, and some fundamental, very difficult moral issues to be addressed. We're going to have to talk about secretly getting rid of these people. If they are unwilling or unable to do it themselves, then maybe we at the United States State Department will find ways to make it happen for them. So let's get back to when we started in the intro, they were talking about population statistics from the old times. So by 1830, world population reached 1 billion people. The second billion was added in the next 100 years. The third billion was added in 30 years by 1960. The fourth billion happened in 15 years. By 1975, at the time of this document. So they're at 4 billion by the time of this document. We are now just about to hit 8 billion. So it has doubled in 50 years, okay, from 4 billion to 8 billion in roughly 50 years. Well, at the rate it was going before, it was doubling 100 years, then it was doubling 30 years, now it's doubling in from 3 billion to 4 billion, it only took 15 years. So it's like, holy shit, this is accelerating. And then they put their plan in place, and now we have the benefit of looking back 50 years later And it still grows. It's still growing, but the population, you know, it's still growing quite a bit. But the population, you know, it took 50 years for it to double. So it added 4 billion people in 5 decades. So they're trying to depopulate, but it's not going well. So between the years, so let's go back to the year 1750, like a little bit before America was formed. From 1750 to 1800, less than 4 million new people were added to this planet every year. Okay. Once you got to 1850 to the year 1900, it was 8 million people were added each year. So it was doubling. By the time you got to 1950, it was 40 million people a year. And by the time you got to 1975, it was 80 million people a year. And just to put things in perspective, when they wrote this document, when Kissinger wrote this in 74, America only accounted for 6% of the world's population. Ironically, though, they consumed 1/3 of the raw materials, which is the reason why they're so focused on this. So let's talk about minerals and fuel. This is from the document. The important political linkage between rapid population growth and minerals availability is indirect rather than direct. I'll explain this in a second. The U.S. has become increasingly dependent on mineral imports from developing countries in recent decades, and this trend is likely to continue. The real problem of mineral supplies lie not in basic physical sufficiency, but in the political economic issues of access. Terms for exploration and exploitation. They fucking say exploitation in here. And division of the benefits among producers, consumers, and host country governments. Basically, what they're saying is, with regard to food, it is a direct relation to population growth. These people need food. The more people you add, the more food you need. But when they're saying with regard to minerals, the more people you add, not necessarily the more minerals they need, but we need the minerals. And they're also saying that the problem isn't in the amount of minerals there. It's not the supply that we have a problem with. There's plenty. The problem is the issue of access to that supply. Now, if you're you have a gold in your country or lithium, And if you're Bolivia and you have lithium and we need it for cell phones, well, the problem isn't how much lithium you have there. The problem is, how do we access it? And if you've got a screwed up government, or a government that has too many people, a country with too many people, and they're all fighting with each other, then that just makes it incrementally more difficult for us to get in that country and buy all their lithium from them, partner with them. Right. So they're not thinking about this in terms of what's good for the planet. Can the planet really carry all this? It's how do we listen? We got resources that we need to get, and they're locked up in these countries. And if the countries are having problems due to overpopulation, it doesn't just become their problem. It's now our problem. And we need to sort out our problem well in advance before it becomes a problem. So this is the thinking. Now, all of this is the theme running through all of this, remember, is Rockefeller, Kissinger, Schwab, depopulation along all of this. So at their core, they want everyone dead, but they can't just come right out and say it. So what they say is, we just want it to be more stable so that we can access all that stuff that they've got. They can't exploit the resources of these countries if there's chaos in the countries, you understand? So it's far more likely for there to be chaos the larger their population goes, especially if they have a large population that's poor, you know? Because they care about the poor to the extent that they can get them working in the salt mines for them, right? So they want the population rates lowered, not for the Earth's benefits, but for America's benefits. And they don't even mind if you know that. All right. So here's a So it, but there are cultural factors to keep in mind when talking about why certain countries have, why certain cultures have more kids, you know, religious, social, socioeconomic, culturally, you know, the, when the parents age out, then the kids take care of the parents. And if I don't have any kids, then I'm going to be old and nobody's going to take care of me. And in this culture, I'll just die. So part of it, in from the parental standpoint, is they've got to have enough kids. They have to think for their future too. They have to have enough kids so that those kids collectively can take care of them when they get past their working age, because there's no social security or anything like that. I'm not that social security is going to be there for us either, but in these cultures, they at least don't even pretend that they have that. So that's why I set this up for this quote, when parents cannot expect most children to survive to old age, they probably will continue to overcompensate using high fertility as a form of hedge to ensure that they will have some living offspring able to support the parents in the distant future. All right, so it's cultural here. This movement from high fertility and high mortality, think India, right? To low fertility and low mortality is known as the demographic transition. And that's what they want. They want the demographic transition. They want it to go from people having a bunch of kids and a bunch of those kids dying to people having fewer kids, but the fewer kids that they have living. So they do mention in this that it is important to have to improve childhood health so that the child mortality rate isn't too high. The infant mortality rate isn't so high. They want things to be better for the kids in these countries, not because they care about the kids, but they figure we want some of them to make it, because these people keep having 8 or 9 kids because they're convinced that 7 of them are going to die. You know, if we can show them that you only need 2 kids because both of them are going to make it, then they won't have 7. That's the thinking. And they won't have 7 because the 2 that make it will be, there'll be, you know, you won't have to spread the limited family resources over like 9 kids. You only have to spread it over 2. And if you do that, then there's a better chance of them getting educated. And then there's a better chance of them having a job. And there's a better chance of them making more money. And therefore, there's a better chance of them taking care of these parents when they age out. That's what they're trying to do. So they're trying to change the whole culture. They're trying to convince these countries that they don't need to have, they don't need to be insects and have 8,000 kids, right? They just need to have a couple, but they need to take better care of them. I mean, it's real white devil shit. Okay. Let's just be honest here. They go on to list the cause of high birth rates in poor countries. This is the reason why the birth rates are so high in these countries. First, the people are stupid. They don't know how to stop having kids. They talk about that in here. They say these people are dumb and they're just going to keep breeding because they're dumb. Like Idiocracy. Mike Judge needs to give Henry Kissinger co-writing credit on Idiocracy. Number 2, the people need a few of them to survive. And number 3, these changes take a long time. This is not the sort of thing you can just walk into Africa and mandate, you know. You're talking about cultural changes. But here's the thing. And of course, the high birth rates in these countries, their focus is Africa, Southeast Asia, and South America. And this is where you start to get into the nefarious shit. Because what they're saying is that these people are stupid. They don't know how to stop having kids. And this is going to take a long time for us to convince them to stop having kids because they're stupid. And, you know, so what we're going to do in the meantime is secretly add sterilants to the vaccines, which is what they've been doing. Okay. This whole industry, this whole concept is called population dynamics. And it's worth mentioning that Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein were very interested in the topic of population dynamics. You know, I'm sure that's not much of a surprise. Remember, Epstein was working on all this stuff, and people were like, why is he so focused on, why is he working with Martin Nowak on evolutionary dynamics and evolutionary game theory? And what's he doing with all these guys? They're working on depopulation on top of all this stuff. Okay, so implications of population pressure for national security. Population factors contribute to socioeconomic variables, including this is what they mentioned: breakdowns in social structures, unemployment or underemployment, poverty, fewer opportunities for education and jobs. Okay, so they're saying, look, the more people you have, the fewer opportunities. You're gonna have 10 people for every one job opening, right? So that's gonna create poverty, unemployment, underemployment, and breakdowns in social structure, because nobody's going to be working. Everybody's going to be standing on a street corner waiting for a handout, right? So this leads to, they say, juvenile delinquents. It leads to more problems. If you have too many people and they don't have opportunities, it leads to juvenile delinquency, crime, food riots, terrorism, kidnapping, guerrilla warfare, revolutionary movements, and the weakening and collapse of governments. Okay. We should be so lucky to have the collapse of governments. And they mention this, and they're right to mention this, because it does lead to this. If you have a really poor country and people have got nothing to lose and they're starving, you know, and they're dirt poor, it is reasonable to expect that juvenile delinquency will be high. You have no education system there. Crime will be high, food riots, terrorism, guerrilla warfare. I mean, this is obvious. We see this in poorer countries. When you have no options, you got no options. You join the gang. You know, you do what you got to do. Then if that scenario happens, then what this could lead to, and they mention this, is mass migration, border incidents, and wars. And this is the big problem, right? They don't want mass migrations that they're not controlling, because it screws up they need to know what they're working with within these governments, within these countries. And if you start to screw up your country so bad that it's creating mass migration, then it's tougher for these multinational companies to manage this, right? So it's not about what's best for humanity. It's about what's best for American empire. And the group that is running through this entire document, the group managing this whole program, is USAID. That is the United States Agency for International Development. USAID is how you'll see the acronym, USAID. Now, when you see USAID, there's two things that you should think of: the Central Intelligence Agency and regime change. That's what they do. Okay, they're a governmental body that is focused on international development. And by international development, they mean making countries do what we want them to do through a variety of measures. Now, this is, you know, it'll be sort of sold as charitable work. Oh, USAID is on the scene. They're going to come in and help you. They're going to give you all these tools that you need to help your country do, you know, better in all these areas. Look, if USAID is operating inside your country, that is a bad sign. It means that they're working to undermine your country's sovereignty, more than likely getting ready to replace your dictator or instituting depopulation agendas. So policy recommendations. This is, we're back to the book. It's a document, felt like a book. All recommendations are supported by the World Population Plan of Action drafted at the 1974 World Population Council. Okay, so there is good news. At this council, at this event that they had a couple months before this document was drafted, there is some good news from it. Okay, I'm going to read you some of the things that they, because they're not very optimistic about being able to change this population. They kind of admit it, that it, like, the horse is out of the barn. Okay. Now, this is from the World Population Plan of Action that was drafted in 1974. It says this: there are too many powerful socioeconomic factors operating on family size decisions and too much momentum built into the dynamics of population growth to permit a quick and dramatic reversal of current trends. There's also even less cause for optimism on the rapidity of social economic progress that would generate rapid fertility reduction in the poor LDCs than on the feasibility of extending family planning services to those in their populations who may wish to take advantage of them. Thus, at this point, we cannot know with certainty when world population can feasibly be stabilized, nor can we state with assurance the limits of the world's ecological carrying capacity. But we can be certain of the desired direction of change and can state as a plausible objective the target of achieving replacement fertility rates by the year 2000. And those replacement fertility rates are 2 kids for every family, not 9 kids for every family. So, but they admit it. In the doc, they admit here, they say, we don't know what the carrying capacity of the planet is. Interesting, because what I hear is there's too many people on this planet. We've run the numbers and there's just too many of them. Well, I've also seen other studies that say that if you were to put everybody in the planet standing shoulder to shoulder with one another, they would fit inside the city of Jacksonville, Florida. So not that you'd want to live like that or live in Jacksonville, Florida, for that matter. I'm kidding. But just to put it in perspective, and there's plenty of room. Have you driven through Texas before? There's plenty of room. Okay. But these big cities, obviously you go to a major city, it doesn't feel like that. So, I'm being assaulted by a cat while we do this. So my apologies. One of the solutions mentioned this document, man, I'll tell you, it's funny what they write when they think that nobody's reading it except their guys. But one of the solutions mentioned is giving the countries money through USAID to all the countries that were interested in the program. Like if you're a country and you say, oh, what is this reproductive services plan that you're talking about? We're interested in it. USAID will give you all the money that that you need for that, right? But, as long as, you know, as long as you want it and as long as you're on good political terms with America and there's no problem with us giving you this money, then USAID will hook you up with it. Okay. Now, if they weren't on good terms with America in this foreign country, or the country wasn't interested, this is an very important part. If the country wasn't interested in the birth control population reduction plan, then USAID said they would give the money to private/international organizations and they would give the money to the countries secretly. They said it in there. They said, well, look, if we can't give it to them, because there's some sort of like, we have some political problem with Indonesia, let's say. Indonesia and America have a big political problem in this scenario, in this fictional scenario. We can't give them money for depopulation. First of all, they hate us and it will look bad, but we really want to depopulate them. So what we'll do as USAID is we'll give it to this company over here. We'll give it to, oh, I don't know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And we'll let them do it. Now, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation didn't exist in 1974 when Henry Kissinger wrote this, but it does now. And guess who gives a lot of money to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? USAID. They describe population assistance, is what they call this, as an invisible instrument for carrying out U.S. foreign policy in this area. I cannot believe they write this stuff. I can't believe it. Well, they don't think you're ever going to see it. So in this document, they recognize that their actions might be viewed as a form of economic or racial imperialism and that it could create backlash. Really? You think? It is they say it is important to avoid the appearance of coercion. They said they would partner up with the World Health Organization, World Bank, UNICEF, to get these countries access to family planning. But this is where the secret sterilization program comes in. Again, here we go. Because who got busted in Kenya putting sterilants in the tetanus vaccine? The World Health Organization did. And when they finally had to admit that, not, this was 2014 when they got busted. Not only did they have to admit that they had done it, they had to admit that they had been doing it for a decade. The World Health Organization, I'm going to repeat that. The World Health Organization got busted putting sterilants in the tetanus vaccines that they were giving out, secretly putting sterilants, obviously, in the tetanus vaccines that they were giving out to people in Kenya. And they admitted that they had been doing it for a decade. This is why they're doing it. This memorandum 200 from 1974, the Kissinger report. This is why the World Health Organization has the idea to do that. It's where it comes from. It's why the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation got busted doing the same thing. Because they were doing, USAID was saying, we can't really officially sanction this, but we can give money to you guys and then you guys go do it. Quote, it is vital that the effort to develop and strengthen a commitment on the part of the LDC leaders not be seen by them as an industrialized country policy to keep their strength down or to reserve resources for use by rich countries. Development of such a perception could create a serious backlash adverse to the cause of population stability. Look, in these lesser developed countries, we can't let it be known that America is the one doing it, because we're going to be looking like rich imperialists that just want their resources, which we are and which we do. And it would create a severe backlash. So what we need to do is we need to make it look like it's the rulers' ideas. And then we need to give them all the credit for it. We have to. We can't take any credit. We're not supposed to be doing this. Because it'll create backlash. You think? They then ponder if they should impose mandatory rules on these countries. And, you know, look, there's a Henry Kissinger quote about food as a weapon. This is why Henry Kissinger is one of the top 10 worst people of my lifetime. They ponder whether or not they should impose mandatory rules on these countries and move to use food as a weapon. They talk about whether or not they should nationalize or internationalize the agricultural industry as a way of starving their population down to, quote, the correct size. They are contemplating genocide in this document. And they're saying they'll use food as a weapon to do it in order to get the populations of these countries down to what they determine to be the correct size. Now, if this was you and your dumb buddies drunk at a bar talking about how you're going to reduce the world's population, that'd be one thing. You know what I mean? Wouldn't it be wild? That'd be one thing. You don't have the resources to do that. But from 1965 to 1974, a decade, USAID spent $625 million on population activities, which sounds like a lot of money. They mention in the document that they have $137.5 million to spend in 1975 alone. So you know what I did? I went and I looked up I got a calculator, one of these inflation calculators that allows you to put in the money at this year and then what it would be this year. So to put that into today's money, that would be $757 million in 1 year that USAID is using for population control. $750 million. That's just in 1975. They project to spend $350 million in 1980, and that works out to $1.25 billion in 1 year. So they're planning to spend the equivalent of, in our money today, that we can put it in, you know, that we can get used to, well over $1 billion a year to reduce the world's population in foreign countries. Quiet-like. Don't make a big fucking deal about this. Like, shut your mouth, but the money's there if you need it. Programs are there. It's reproductive health services. We're helping. We're helping. We're the good guys. We could never be the bad guys because we're the good guys. And if we spend money on your reproductive services, that's because we're really worried about African women dying during childbirth. We want to make sure that doesn't happen anymore. So we've got money for you. No. No. They want you sterilized. And they got all the money in the world for that program. Look, USAID spent COVID money all over the world, but it was really just being used to fund abortions and birth control. They're not allowed to fund abortions, but it was being used for that. $10 billion plus of COVID money went away for that. Isn't that funny? USAID spent $10 billion of COVID money on sterilization programs. Because there was no oversight. There's no oversight anyway with USAID. I mean, when your partner, when your best friend is the CIA, there's no oversight, right? So I want to read some terms that I found in the document that sound crazy. Just like you again, this was not meant to be read. This was not meant for everybody to be poring over this document. So when you read sentences that say things like Social Security and other substitutes for the economic value of children, you go, what? Economic value of children? They're talking about in the context of when the parents age out, these children need to be able to provide for the parents. And so they have there's an economic value assigned to these children when they're born, which is that when they're 40, you know, like 40 years from now, these children are going to be taking care of the parent. It's a weird way of looking at things. Economic value. When I see the term economic value of children, and Henry Kissinger wrote it, I start to get very nervous. Not as nervous as the children, though, I'll tell you that. Quote, if more female education does, in fact, cause fertility declines, will poor, high fertility parents see much advantage in sending their daughters to school? If so, how much does it cost to educate a girl to the point where her fertility will be reduced, which occurs at about the fourth grade level? So what they started, I said I would talk about this later. What they did is they made a calculation. They said, the more educated you are, the less likely you are to have a bunch of kids. Okay, that's good, right? Let's educate people so that they don't have as many kids. But they go, education's expensive. What's the minimum amount of education we can do to get to a threshold where it makes a difference? And they said, well, if you educate them up to the fourth grade level, then that's probably the best. I mean, you could go all the way through college, right? And then they'll definitely only have two kids, but that's too expensive. But if you educate them up to the fourth grade level, that's your break-even point. Just smart enough to work the machines, just dumb enough to not figure out that they're getting fucked over. Right? Quote, there have been some controversial but remarkably successful experiments in India in which financial incentives, along with other motivational devices, what the fuck does that mean, were used to get large numbers of men to get vasectomies. We paid a bunch of guys in India to get vasectomies. Oh, did it go well? It was okay. But we also used other motivational devices. What was that? We're not telling. Oh, did you threaten them? This is wild. Quote, proposals, and like I said, I just cut these, just wrote these things down as they came in, like wild sentences that you read and you have to reread a couple times and you go, am I reading this right? This says proposals have been made for sun insurance, not S-U-N insurance, S-O-N, sun insurance, provided to the parents if they have no more than three children. Okay, hear me out on this. This is what USAID was proposing. They said, why don't we do this? You guys culturally want to have a bunch of kids because you need boys. You need a son to carry on the family name and get a job because maybe you're in a place where women don't work and we keep having kids till I get a boy. And what they're saying is, what if we offered you like an insurance policy where if you had three kids but none of them turned out to be boys, then maybe this Social Security policy kicked in, this insurance policy kicked in, so that when you did get older, you'd have this instead of that son you were always hoping for, but you can only have three kids. They talked about this. They talked about a fucking insurance policy for people to not have so many kids in case, in the event that they have three girls, but they never have a boy. This is insanity. But this is how this is not limited to America. This is how empirical people think. When you're creating empires and you're taming the savages, you don't want them breeding, right? You don't want the savages to breed because then they'll overrun you. So who's involved in this? They mentioned, USAID mentioned that they could have international groups, private groups and international groups involved. So who are the international groups? Well, I'll read you who they are. No surprise, some of the worst groups around, right? It starts with the UNDP, not a name you hear too much. United Nations Development Program, okay? That's kind of at the top here. And then underneath that, you've got UNFPA, and there's not going to be a test on this, so you don't have to write it down, but I'm just throwing these acronyms and these organizational, the names of the organizations out there, so that if you ever see them in the future and maybe it'll ring a bell, you'll go, I think I've heard this somewhere. These aren't, most of these aren't like names you hear too much. So UNFPA, United Nations Fund for Population Activities. UNICEF, you probably heard of that. UNICEF, UNICEF, United Nations Children Fund, where they steal children, I suspect. I don't know. UNESCO, UNESCO, United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization. WHO, World Health Organization. We know about them. IDA, International Development Association. World Bank. Got to have the World Bank in there, right? ILO, International Labor Organization, and that labor is spelled in a British way, which leads me to believe that this is, that that's a British organization. Same with World Food Program and the EC, the Economic Commission. So these are the international partners. United Nations connected, obviously. Rockefellers started the United Nations. Rockefeller family started the United Nations as a tool for global government. I mean, that's about as easy as you can describe it. But underneath the United Nations umbrella, you get into the UNDP and UNICEF and UNESCO and World Health Organization. All these are all Rockefeller organizations, right? So then again, back to where we started. David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Klaus Schwab. Section 114 of the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961 adds restrictions on the use of USAID funds for abortion. But they probably just gave the money to these private organizations and let them do it. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and whatnot, right? So they are, USAID's hands are tied when it comes to just outright financing abortions. But like we said earlier, they admit in the document that if there is a problem where they can't have an official relationship because the country one country doesn't get along with America and there's some sort of political thing, then they just go around it by giving the money to the private and international organizations. So when the hands of USAID are tied there legally by the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961, saying you can't give money to these countries for abortions, you guys at USAID can't be involved in abortions. They say, we're not involved in abortions. We would never do that. We just will hand millions of dollars to these private organizations and then they do whatever they want with it. Do abortions with it. That's what they do. That's it. It's very, this is how it gets done, right? So they go on towards the tail end of this document to talk about the utilization of mass media for dissemination of family planning services and information. They want to get the word out. They say, well, how are we going to do this? How are we going to get the word out about what we're planning to do? We want all these poor farmers to get themselves on the pill or IUDs or whatever, you know. So how are we going to do that? Well, we've got to spread the word. So it's important because there's a high illiteracy rate as well. So you have to take that into account. India is only like 30% literate at this point in 1975. So you have to really take into account that, like, we can't just do pamphlets because nobody can read. So we're going to have to talk about it. So they say that radio, they do say posters, print media are part of it because they're so cheap, and they do hope that they'll get the people that do read. But for everyone else, it's personal contacts and radio, because they say radio costs 1/5 of TV. They also say the use of satellites to beam educational television programs to isolated areas. Man, in 1974, satellites were garbage, right? You know, there's no direct TV back then. But they're talking about using them to beam direct TV, like, you know, signals into isolated areas. Like, forget Monday Night Football. They want to make sure that these people are understanding that they need to get IUDs. That's the priority. It's psychotic, man. And I think it's worth mentioning that there is no domestic population policy in the United States, because what they show is that in these figures that the developed world, their reproductive rate is so much lower that it's almost insignificant. Whereas, and it's not a priority. Plus, you know, there's lots of white people in those countries, so their focus is on the brown people. As Carlin would say, you know, if your country's got brown people, look out. You know, you're about to get some democracy. You're also about to get sterilized as well. And so they want to really reduce these birth rates. And lastly, from the document, this is talking about the role of the State Department with USAID. So USAID should expand its programs to increase the understanding of LDC leaders, lesser developed countries leaders, regarding the consequences of rapid population growth and their commitment to undertaking remedial actions. This should include necessary actions for collecting and analyzing adequate and reliable demographic data to be used in promoting awareness of the problem and in formulating appropriate policies and programs. The State Department wants USAID to collect demographic data so that they can formulate a program for it. Data collection becomes biometric collection. Biometric collection becomes genetic weapons, targeted vaccines for specific gene types. Depopulate the third world using vaccines. They want the information because they're going to make genome-specific bioweapons that will be loaded into vaccines and used on the third world. It's not my opinion. You can read about it. DARPA's already doing it. Past tense, has already done it. It's already been done. So, look. Let's wrap it up by saying this. The point of this document, there's three things. How do we depopulate the world without it looking like we're depopulating the world. How do we manage the process of doing this, and how do we profit from it? It's the most disgusting concept out there. The idea that Henry Kissinger and his group of people would be in charge of how many people live or die on this planet, it's ghoulish. But too many people mean disruptions for these globalist corporations. And understand that the plan is a one-world government. And it's harder to get control of these countries when there's just hundreds of millions of people running loose. Shrink that population down to a more manageable size that it can be controlled. And then you have the easier chance of rolling that country into a conglomerate of African unions or whatever. And then that being rolled into the one world government. So devious, horrible stuff, you know, sorry. Hate to be the bearer of bad news, but look, if you live in India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Nigeria, Mexico, Indonesia, Brazil, Philippines, Thailand, Egypt, Turkey, Ethiopia, or Colombia, America wants you dead. They want your children to not be born. They want your women to be sterilized, and they are doing that as we speak. It's a shitty, shitty thing to do, but look, we have to acknowledge that it's happening. We need to be honest about it. We need to call it out. We need to recognize it for what it is. Silent genocide. If you liked this episode, and I don't mean you like genocide, but you thought this was an interesting episode and you think that maybe someone in your close circle would appreciate it, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to connect with me, you can do so through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. I'll talk to you later.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.